If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Watch your back, son.
I'm Luke.
I'm Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager. Captain Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager. Captain
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
And I'm fully naked. And I'm Benjamin Harrison.
A little peek behind the pod here. Ben and I do many of these episodes over Slack, and there's a video component to that.
Yeah.
Ben came to the Slack call with video on.
I forgot it was on. It was on by default. It was bad. Yeah, the Uxbridge Shimoda HR department, I'm sure, will be reaching out to me over my Tubin-like inappropriate behavior on a work call.
I really hope this isn't anyone's first episode of The Greatest Generation, but if it is, at the end of the last episode, a roll of the dice sent our runabout on the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker, to a square that, by rule, forces us to do it tub style.
Yeah, yeah. Neelix style from the bathtub. I apologize for my bad luck, Adam. This is one of the many reasons I'm not a gambling man. I'm just unlucky, generally speaking. But I rolled us a naked now, and you're in your bathtub, I'm in mine. It's not ideal. It's not an ideal way to record an episode.
Ben, a few episodes ago, I mentioned a bit of family planning that we were doing in our household. We were preparing for guests, and I think like a lot of folks who desire guests, there's often the question of whether or not you want more after the first.
Right. There's lots of different reasons people go for another set of guests.
I mean, I didn't expect to announce this so soon.
Mm.
But we're having guests again. We have them right now.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is probably derogatory and shouldn't be a saying, but I believe this is called Irish guests.
There is a window there where you shouldn't try so soon.
Right.
But we just couldn't help ourselves. So this is a long walk to get to this end of the trail here, Ben. Mm. But due to having guests at our place right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I looked into the Uxbridge Shimoda bylaws. You and I both have the corporate manual, all 500 pages of it. I don't know if you have yours in the tub. I wouldn't take that paper manual in there. What I'll tell you is if you'll turn to page 42.
Okay, yeah.
Section 9.
Oh, paragraph. Section 9. Okay.
Paragraph 3.
Uh-huh.
Line 4.
Yeah, I'm seeing it.
Both hosts still possess a veto. And Ben, just so you wouldn't feel totally alone, I'm not in my tub. But I do have one of those oil changing buckets that you put under a vehicle when you change the oil.
Uh-huh.
I've got my feet in one of those.
Oh, that's great.
So I've rolled up my pants.
Wow.
My feet are in a vessel of water.
Did you put like some Epsom salts or anything in your vessel?
What sucks about this is they're already cold.
Oh, my God.
And they're
God.
Only going to get colder.
Oh my God, Adam.
I didn't want you to be doing a show with a completely dry co-host. I did cite a bylaw rule that might have gotten me out completely.
Yeah. Oh.
But as it is, you are in a tub and I am not. For just a whole variety of reasons. I threw a lot of reasons at you, hoping mm-hmm. one of them
would be
stick.
Persuasive and that this wouldn't become another Coco No-No scandal.
Yeah, let's just recap. Both because of our decision to have out-of-town guests and our very own company bylaws, and also that I am technically wet, you are completely naked in a tub.
Technically wet is going to be one of those titles that sounds so much more salacious when people click on the episode.
Yeah, it's true.
They're going to be very disappointed.
It almost goes without saying.
Yeah. Well, I'm in a tub. My tub has gotten a lot more fun since we've last done one of these because it's full of toys for a toddler to play with while taking a bath now. I've got rubber duckies. I've got little, like a turtle that squirts.
Those sound like great things for a bunch of studio gear to be in close proximity to.
I think this will come out like right before the Max Fun Drive, this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, candidly, behind the scenes, this is the leanest possible time for our business. So, you know, like if a microphone goes in the drink, if a laptop goes in the drink, just the perfect timing for something like that, I would say.
I'd say another aspect that's fairly exciting on your end is you haven't held back in sharing the many trials and tribulations of home ownership on your side. I mean, if I were to bet, and I am a betting man, none of those outlets are grounded near the tub, right?
No, we've got a GFCI fault.
Okay.
Fault. I wouldn't want people to worry.
Okay.
This part passed the inspection.
Oh, that's good.
Do you want to get into the episode we came to talk about today?
I can hardly wait, Ben, as my tooties get chillier by the minute. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 7, Episode 17, Workforce, Part 2.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning you around.
Might be useful to know that this one's directed by Roxanne Dawson.
I noticed that. Very exciting. I loved whatever this prop on the wall was that Chakotay broke right at the beginning. Like, we ended the last one on a literal cliff, a balcony. Like, he's running from 5-0. He's, like, up on some structure, and he gets, you know, into a corner where the only option is to jump over the edge, but there's a force field. And right at the beginning of this episode, he is busting this like glass cylinder with a bunch of delicate machinery inside it with a pipe. And that seems to knock out the force field. And I just loved the design of this prop. And then it's like a pretty exciting firefight. Like the cops come around and they notice that the force field is down. And then Chakotay like jumps out a bush or something. And like, I think he kills both of them.
This is what my point was, like, as soon as Chakotay starts wielding a melee weapon, like, he's a hard pipe-hitting first officer to bust up the field that's trapping him.
Yeah.
But he should have held on to that thing to beat up those security folks.
Yeah, but he shoots them, and we don't know that they had those things on stun setting, you know?
Yeah, I like the idea that this Chakotay has got some bodies.
Yeah. And this is prime Chakotay. I mean, he's in love, but it's the real deal.
He isn't the only one under fire. Voyager is under fire from a Quarren patrol ship. And on the bridge, if you recall, it's just Commander Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
And Harry Kim working the controls up there.
Yeah.
And they've got to come up with a strategy because the Quarren are kind of equals in terms of ship defense technology.
Yeah, interesting that in this episode that is true because these are the same ships that we saw Mark handily defeat one of in order to go hide in a nebula in the last episode. But now their shields are impenetrable and he has to do some kind of fancy, you know, checking in his tactical database work to come up with this plan, which is fire a photon torpedo in between the pursuing ships and then take the torpedo out with a phaser.
This seems like something they should be doing more often.
It's very effective. Like two ships with one torpedo. That's the ideal.
It really is.
So they can't just circle back and go rescue everybody because there's five more ships inbound. So they've got to retreat and come up with another plan.
This episode does a good job with that kind of tone, right? Like whatever victories you achieve, that good feeling lasts for a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And that's apparent here. Like there's a moment where they can feel good about this, but with five more ships incoming, they have to retreat. They can't transport their folks away.
It's like two different games of Grand Theft Auto going on at the same time where the Voyager has a bunch of stars on their level of the cops are mad at them, and so does Chakotay. But when we cut back to Quora, Chakotay has reduced his number of sirens to zero, so he is able to safely walk into a bar.
It means for some reason a police cruiser hasn't driven through the bar at him.
Yeah.
Once those five stars hit, man, it's like police cruisers get dropped off of buildings on top of you.
Yeah, there are.
Where do they even come from?
Like, there are Homeland Security Humvees just, like, falling from the sky on you. It's like, are there really that many of those ready to be deployed at a moment's notice because I stole this ambulance or whatever?
Not many workplaces wouldn't notice you coming into work bleeding. but this place is one of those, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, he's got a little owie on his shoulder. Seems pretty serious. Janeway also doesn't notice when she comes up to like apologize for my name is Jaffin's earlier rudeness, which I was amazed that they called back to the like they didn't put that in the last time on Voyager, but like that was like one of the most exciting parts of last episode was when Jaffin was like, actually, I don't want to hang out with the two of you.
One of the most exciting parts to just you and me living in the world was that moment.
It didn't take any special effects or anything. He just said it.
It's hard to know what is more painful for Chakotay in this moment, the meat hanging off of his shoulder from a direct phaser blast, or what his heart is feeling. Seeing how happy Janeway is with another dude.
Because he's got the pencil in his hand and the camera pans down and he's like getting ready to snap it. But then she invites him over to the table with them. And so he doesn't. And he's like, oh, wow, what are you celebrating? And she's like, I'm moving in with Jaffin. And the camera pans back down and he snaps the pencil.
He needs to do that Rambo thing where he breaks the pencil and then pours the lead into the wound and then lights it to cauterize it.
Cauterizes the pencil. We get to meet a guy named Yared who shows up asking about BLT. This is a real that guy, Yared. He's on CSI New York. He's also like in The Equalizer. I've seen him in a bunch of things.
I was wondering where he got his authority and... He got it at Yared.
He went to Yared?
Yeah, he really did.
Yeah, so Tom is like answering like, oh yeah, BLT, we know her. And, you know, like she left with this like model-y guy with bad facial hair. I think his name was Neelix. And then this other guy, and he's sitting right over the... What?
There's an interesting thing that runs through this entire episode, which is brought up later, like the idea that some but not all of these people's memories have been either removed or changed or memories have been added or whatever. But I think the Paris example is interesting because one might assume that a big part of his personality is kind of anti-authority.
Right.
So to see him like wanting to help an investigator, wanting to play ball at all times, it made me wonder whether or not that was him or that was an implanted personality type.
Interesting. I thought it was maybe just like this has kind of got a reputation as being a cop bar. So, you know, they know which side of the bread the butter is on kind of a thing.
Right. You buy a drink for someone at the cop bar. You might accidentally buy a drink for three or four innocent people sitting behind them.
The city is supposed to be safe.
Meanwhile, we cut over to an asteroid where they've parked Voyager inside of a crater. This is an ingenious place to hide because it's the crater is like, you know, masking any sensor signal of the ship. And meanwhile, Mark is working on trying to help BLT get her memory back, because as far as she knows, she's just been abducted. And I really loved the kind of parallel situation all through this episode, that the Voyager crew, like, that is left over is sort of trying to do exactly to these people who don't know that they're from the Voyager crew, like, what was already done to them. Like, they have to, like, abduct them and change their state of mind to make them believe that this is where they need to be.
Yeah, in many ways, like, does two wrongs make a right here?
Wow. Deep.
It's as if BLT's brain has been planted in weird dirt. This is the scene where we get a little bit of the story. Like, I think one of the great things this episode does is not give us too much information about exactly what's going on here. Like, Commander Dr. Mark is like, yeah, some basic memories are changed, but some things stay. Like, you definitely know your name.
Yeah.
But maybe other things are altered. Like, that it's not definitive, I think, is good. It works to this episode's benefit.
I agree. So Neelix is going to help do the kind of soft therapy stuff while Dr. Mark works on, like, actual medical interventions. And the soft therapy just entails, like, kind of the show and tell, like, take her around the ship, show her, you know, familiar places.
Neelix is like, one of the things you loved to do the most was rub my feet. That's definitely the first thing we should do. I'm sure the memories will come flooding right back.
Yeah, that's a feast for the senses that is sure to unlock most of the rest of your personality.
You know, sometimes a meal can really awaken a memory. So maybe you should get down on these tootsies. See what comes back.
Bon appetit.
God damn.
Our course is locked in.
Do it.
Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
We cut to the medical facility that we've visited a couple of times here, and we've got Dr. Caden and Dr. Ravok. And Dr. Caden is the old guy that's been kind of injecting people against their will the whole time. And Dr. Ravok seems like a kind of a new guy that's been hired recently. And, you know, he's talking to Dr. Caden about, like, oh, yeah, this guy Tuvok says that his Katra has been stolen. And we don't know what a Katra is, but it's just weird. Like, you don't usually see, like, relapses in cases of dysphoria syndrome. And I'm very concerned about this patient. And Caden's like, yeah, just wipe his memory, start over.
Resequencing is a radical procedure.
I love the, like, yeah, like, you would cut out a tumor, right?
Did you get Extreme Measures vibes from their interplay?
The Hugh Grant, Gene Hackman movie that for some reason you and I and no other people have seen?
That's why I brought it up. No one loves that movie more than us.
Yeah, yeah. That should be a bonus episode. When are we going to do the Extreme Measures bonus episode?
I think it should happen. I think it should happen soon.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the younger doctor, it feels like you can trust him. I don't know how we're able to feel that way right now, but, like, he definitely doesn't seem to be a part of this, and the older doctor definitely does.
Yeah, well, I think just the fact that the older doctor is obviously manipulating him, and he's like, I don't know, and the older doctor is doing that thing that, like, seasoned professionals with a lot of, you know, prestige in their field can sometimes do to newbies, which is just like, yeah, like, you're just going to have to assume everything I say is, like, extremely smart and well thought out, and I'm not going to explain all of my reasoning to you, because that would be below me.
His aggressiveness seems weird, because it does not seem like the affliction requires it, you know? Like, it would be different if this guy was bleeding out on the table or whatever. But, yeah, like, he really wants to get in there with these memories.
He would love that.
Back at the factory, Seven is kind of looking down on the factory floor, and sure does look Borgsish down there, huh?
We saw that she got mind-melded in the last episode, mm-hmm. and we saw into the mind-meld that there were some specifically Borgie memories brought back up. But like, man, like the whole episode, I was dying to have her have a little bit more expository dialogue about what was going on in her head. You know,
it would be great if we got a little bit of a clip show with her and it was just that weird Borgs with a giant butt. It was actually mostly that yeah, Borgs.
The 29th century butt Borgs.
I am an advanced form of life.
That would have been good. I mean, I think that her arc could have been so interesting if like mainly what she remembered was being a Borgs and she was like, I don't know what my old job was, but I'm really glad that whatever happened to me, I'm here now, you know.
That's a much more interesting take, like that she doesn't remember Voyager at all, but it's her life as a Borg she's maybe missing in some fucked up way.
That's not the way they go with her. Instead, this investigator that showed up at the bar pops into the factory, the power station where everybody's working, looking for Neelix and BLT and Chakotay. And she's like, yeah, weird. Like none of them showed up for work today.
You get the sense that he gathered at Yared is really hot on the trail. And also, as frustrated as anyone else would be about a couple of no-call, no-shows.
Especially during a labor crisis, you know, and you heard that, you know, the government authorities were considering just like lowering the age at which you could get a work permit. But nobody would come out because they were all in quarantine.
He gets it pretty close, though. Like, he knows that Chakotay is involved in this somehow.
Yeah.
Like, you get a sense for his doggedness and determination.
Right.
You want to know how Janeway and My Name is Jeffin are getting along? They're doing that move-in process where her belongings are commingling with his.
Oh, yeah.
And lordy, does she have a lot of bric-a-brac.
It's so hard when your captain's trinkets clash with your partner's captain's trinkets.
My Name is Jeffin has to be horrified at where this is going domestically. Just try to imagine every aesthetic decision you've ever made exploding at the speed of light. Total decorative reversal.
Yeah, it's really brutal.
His place is never going to be the same. It's never going to look like him.
Specifically, she collects like industrial junk. So, like, that clashes with everybody's aesthetic, right?
She's kind of a hoarder, right? Do you think Jeffin is starting to get a little concerned?
Yeah. Maybe he bit off more. I mean, you shouldn't move in this quickly with somebody you just met, right?
That's kind of part of the magic of this episode, is that should be a major bump in the entire thing. Like, to the extent that I feel like the doctor should have said, yeah, like, it makes you really codependent in kind of a serious way. Like, that's weird.
So we should work on that with the serum.
There's coffee in the rest of my things.
One decoration aesthetic that Janeway does not really ride for is the bloody rags trend.
Mm.
So hot in other quarters.
Yeah. I mean, you go on social media, you see people doing this, like, bloody rag chic kind of decoration aesthetic. And it's like, I mean, it looks good in your house, but I don't think it would be functional over here.
There are entire HGTV shows about bloody rag lap. In the dark, there's Chakotay, still wounded in both his heart and his shoulder. And he's holding a phaser in his good hand. And it seems pretty dangerous with My Name is Jeffin in the next room. Chakotay shuts and locks the door behind her, and he starts explaining that BLT and some others on the planet are there against their will, and if he could just crash there for a while. He appeals to her sense of not wanting to cause more harm.
Jeffin knows where I am. He'll come looking for me.
I'm hoping you won't tell him I'm here.
Pretty great moment here when Chakotay is able to both convince her not to narc on him and also fix his broken shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love the choice that he made not to try and convince her that she's one of them initially. Mm-hmm. And I love how much of her personality is intact, where she's like, you know, you'd be making a much more persuasive point if you weren't waving that pistol around.
No matter what's done to Janeway's brains, there is no version of her that is attracted to Chakotay. That has got to be so crushing for him.
Yeah. So she kind of acquiesces to his initial request.
Why are you only attracted to old guys? Old silver foxes. That's your type.
Does this guy have a beautiful Irish setter or something? Like, what are we doing here?
What? Do you want me to change my hair color? I would do it.
Meanwhile, on Voyager, Neelix is walking BLT through her apartment with Tom and working on her memories. And she's like, okay, sword in the room where the baby is going to sleep. That sort of feels like me.
She's like, my mouth tastes like feet right now. Like, could I actually brush my teeth?
And he's like, oh, yeah, you can have like a Leola root lozenge to kind of freshen your breath a little bit. And she's like, ugh, what is it with you?
This is a great moment, and I think this is one of the several scenes where we get a Roxanne Dawson directing herself.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a very common occurrence in Star Trek. The actor-directors who do episodes largely abstain from acting in those episodes.
Yeah, they tend to kind of sit them out for the most part, and that's not this.
I kind of admired how much double duty Roxanne Dawson was doing. In both pleasing that booty and directing and acting here.
It was very interesting to me because she is playing it as being very fragile, which I feel like you must be if you're kind of like stuck on, you know, in a rift between two identities. Like she's starting to lose her old identity, but hasn't completely got her fingernails into the original identity. I shouldn't have said old identity. Fake identity and original identity would have been a smarter way to put that. But yeah, she's like playing it like, you know, somebody who's like been hurt, you know, like she's like being very ginger with herself, the way she walks around the space and stuff. And I really liked that.
There's a lot of production choices that I think helps evoke this feeling, don't you think? Like the way that when she's in her quarters, you know, viewing her domestic life from kind of a remove, like the light in those quarters is very soft. She's not wearing her uniform.
Yeah.
She's speaking very softly. Like all of these elements add up to what you're describing.
Yeah. And like it also helps pay off later when she shows up in uniform, like BLT is fucking back, you know?
Neelix chooses an interesting time to leave her. I thought a lot about this moment. Like she very clearly notices the Batleth before kneeling at the front of the crib. It made me wonder, like, in what way could she be a threat that they don't know about? There's a lot of trust extended when Neelix leaves the room here.
Even when she's like in her best self, she's had violent reactions to situations she didn't like. So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I leave the room if I'm Neelix.
Yeah, maybe a bad call. Later at the power plant, Janeway is there really late and she's like rifling through, the office supplies, like stealing pens and shit. And Seven like catches her and is like, you know, those Post-its are for office use, not for you to just take home. And she's like, well, I need them because my husband is really forgetful and he won't go to the doctor about it.
Yeah, I actually write work things on the Post-its at home. So, like, technically,
yeah,
there's a use case there.
She goes, if you're going to need me to be responsive to emails on nights and weekends, I'm going to take some fucking Post-its home.
Post-it one. I am not attracted to Chakotay or anything about him.
Oh, man. This is the episode where you finally drive Bree Belkey away from our show, Adam.
Seven, after attempting to stop this thievery in the workplace, goes to use a computer terminal to look at Tuvok's file, and there's really not any species information in his record. And then she digs into the other files of some other employees, and there are a bunch of Voyager folks on screen here. It seems like she's just at the beginning of her investigation.
Meanwhile, Janeway's back at the apartment fixing up Chakotay's wound. It's a little bit more serious of a wound than the Post-its are going to be able to help. She's like trying to, it's like not good adhesive for that, right? Like I mean, you want to use like a super glue to close up a wound, not just like the removable post-it note adhesive.
Let's recap Janeway's life from the last couple of scenes. She had unpacked all of her things into My Name is Jeffin's quarters. Then she says, I'm going to go get more things. She leaves to go across the hall. She gets held up by Chakotay. Then she goes to work, gets some post-its, goes back over to her apartment. She's been gone for like a couple hours by now, right? My Name is Jeffin doesn't think to go across the hall.
If you moved in with your girlfriend and she ghosted this hard, like mid-move-in day, you'd be very concerned.
This is kind of aspirational, though, like with the Jeffinway relationship.
That's what the tabloids like, call them.
Like, they're both their own people.
Yeah.
Like, well, this they're is very independent.
It's the beauty of a late-in-life romance is, like, you've kind of built your life up. You're very established. It's, like, not... It's not the same thing as when you get together with someone in your 20s and you have all this time to, like, mold them into the person that you want them to be.
Yeah, it really does make me excited for our own late-in-life relationships.
Yeah, when our wives inevitably leave us for the better men that they deserve.
Well, we'll finally get it right, eventually. So Chakotay gets a call from his hand phone. Talk to the hand is what he does. And it's Kim and Commander Mark with the status report. And when she is referred to as captain, it really freaks her out. This is a great Kate Mulgrew moment. Like, she's there, you know, caring for Chakotay and his wounds, but her entire vibe changes when she hears that word. It really freaks her out.
Why did you call me captain?
It's like the moment where you realize like you're getting scammed on like, you know, you get a phone call and you're like, oh, I'm talking to like somebody from Microsoft about my account. And then you're like, oh, this is not somebody from Microsoft about my account. Like she, like her skin runs cold and she's like, wait a second, I should not be helping this like bloody man that broke into my apartment, actually.
It's like she finally gets some street smarts in this moment.
Yeah.
And like moves to protect herself. And this is an interesting scene because Chakotay wants the chance to prove this to her, that she is the captain of a Voyager and these are people that she knows and likes. And I mean, isn't it science fiction to think that proof can change anyone's mind at this point in our society? This was nuts. So Chakotay's got this bright idea to use the dermal regenerator to both remove his loaf and elongate a massive crank. Because, because while he's at it with the dermal regenerator, doesn't that make sense? Like, he's got to make himself look as great as possible.
Would this change your mind?
No.
How about this?
No!
When she goes, we're the same race, and he goes, we're more than that. I really thought, I thought he was trying to set the fish hook on like, we're closer than friends, closer than family. But no, he's just like, we're friends.
This is classic Chakotay though. Just like, this is not seduction in the standard version, but like he does need to like sell her on this.
Right.
And his version of seduction is just kind of being there.
It works, baby.
I've got to get that
platinum.
Get that
low-bed enlargement.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What not? Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
We cut back to the lunchroom where Neelix is serving some pancakes to BLT. She's getting closer to remembering things.
I made the pancakes with Talaxian foot syrup, your favorite. I just take this normal syrup and pour it between my toes. Kind of a squish those tootsies in the batter.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to overmix. Don't overmix your batter.
There's nothing actually pornographic about it, but somehow we got kicked off of Instagram for posting stuff like this.
She's been reading Tom Paris's personal logs. Yikes.
Yeah, bit of a violation. And she doesn't share what's in them, but she likes the way he talks about her.
Tom Paris's log. Stardate 42837.3. I still don't know where it is or where I should put it. It's
there are a lot of holes down there, let me tell you.
My life has never been more confusing.
The fact that she is pregnant right now is so uncanny.
I've never been a lights on person. I don't know how I could do without the lights.
Yeah.
I need him.
Am I making any sense here?
So I think one of the tragedies to the Chakotay Janeway in the state situation is that, like, when Janeway tells My Name is Geffen of Chakotay's existence, like, he's playing the part of this being relationship competition instead of, like, it being a medical problem. And I thought that was so interesting. He's like, if you want to go be with him, just say that. Like, we've been together for a week. Why aren't you taking this seriously?
I wondered about that, like, how long the timeline of this episode is supposed to be. Like, did the Federation place one of their monthly calls and just, like, not get an answer? And they're like, what's up?
I don't know. This angle that he takes is convincing because, like, we smash cut to the next scene and Chakotay is taken out by security.
Yeah.
And where he's taken is to a hospital where he's strapped to a bed.
Yeah.
And he's being interrogated by He Got It at Yared.
And there's, like, this situation where, like, Yared gets, like, overruled by these other guys that are going to take him because he's, like, he's non-compos mentis. And Yared's like, wait a second, mm-hmm. I'm, like, doing an investigation. This guy's, you know, this guy's key to that, and gets overruled. Like, Chakotay is kind of, like, trying to pit two parts of the bureaucracy against each other.
Yeah, I really love this moment for Chakotay. Like you never cross Division Six. You know that.
Right.
And as he's being wheeled away, he's so efficient in how much communication he packs in his wheel away. Like, this is great. He knows what he's doing here. He's got an investigator here that might not be on the take. Like, he might be on the up and up. And so he creates this irresistible mystery for him, yeah, trusting that he's going to chase it down.
It's amazing.
Chakotay is really good at this spy shit. Like this is just another example of how effective he is when he's undercover.
It's a thing I wish we had gotten a ton more of over the course of the last 7 seasons.
Yeah. So in the ready room, Commander Mark is kicking back, and you just see him get comfortable there. Doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel good.
Can't you reprogram him or something?
Kim has got to be kind of simmering in there too, right? Like, how dare you put your feet up? It's not your chair.
Dr. Mark acting like he owns the place and kind of acting like he's going to stay owning the place because he's saying like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go back to being a doctor after this.
I like this ambition from him. Like, this sounds grounded in the reality that we've seen. He's good at his job, and I think that's crucial. It's not that he's fumble-fucking around in a red uniform, like, learning on the job.
Yeah.
He's really good at this. And so it feels possible when he says, I'm going to go ahead and, like, make a blue uniform version of me and then stay red uniform version of me. And Harry Kim absolutely smashes his hollow nuts about this. He's like, dude, you're a book. You're more book than person. You're a book wrapped in like a red grocery bag to protect it when you take it to school every day.
When you put your blue grocery bag back on, you're going to feel just as smug about that position. That's part of your bookness.
Yeah.
So they get hailed by Chakotay, and we see his side of the call when he's talking to Kim and Commander Mark, and Chakotay is being clip-showed, like, presumably manipulated to place this call, which is like a version of the technology that Dr. Caden has that doesn't seem to be present in any other scene. Like, there's like one little moment that does a tiny bit break the episode, but they transmit, like, here's where you got to come for when I get the planetary shielding down so you can beam up the rest of the crew. And so they know exactly where it's going to be, and they're going to send a lot of tough bird persons to kill the Voyager when it comes back. So Dr. Ravik walks in right after all of the, like, evil scheming is going on. Like the brutal men that are presumably going to fly the ships that destroy Voyager have just walked out, and Dr. Mm-hmm. Ravik walks in and is like,
I don't want to bring anything up to you in a way that feels like horrible, but would it be bad for me to, like, mention those to you now?
Maybe this disease that everybody's getting that you're having to treat them for might be coming from the power plant.
It's another great scene for him enshrining his character as on our side.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to tell them about it. In fact, we already did. The hiring director for the power plant happens to be standing right here, and he's well aware.
I love how realistic it feels to see a person with valid concerns for people's well-being made to feel like an idiot.
Right.
Like, well, why would the supervisor of the plant allow an unsafe work environment?
I don't know, Margo.
What do you think that's like a metaphor for something that happens in real life? Is that what you're saying?
His whistle is like on a chain around his neck. He hasn't quite blown it yet, but right. You can tell he's getting close.
Getting ready. So Seven winds up meeting with, he got it at Yared, and she has uncovered through looking at what Tuvok was looking at in the computer, a weird hiring anomaly. More than 100 employees got hired on the same day to work at the power plant, and they are mostly the same species, and they all came right from the hospital having been treated for dysphoria symptoms.
You gotta be concerned at, like, the bulk hire, yeah, right? That's just suspicious anyway.
In this economy?
That they also came without any paperwork? That's confusing and weird.
Yeah. There's just no backstory on these people. What are they to think?
Can he got it? Yared help?
He cannot.
hands are tied now. You shut me down.
He's been fired by the director of investigations.
This has got to be so galling for him. Like, I didn't do anything. Like, I didn't cross any single line.
You know what? I understand why you're confused. You thought I was here for work reasons, but this is a bar, and I just got fired. So if you'll fucking leave me alone so I can have a drink, that would be great.
I'm trying to drink myself silly because of the senselessness of getting fired in the midst of a staffing crisis.
No one feels sorry for old Yared.
So she goes to see Dr. Ravok and like claims that she's having like mild dysphoria symptoms and learns a little bit more about how the medical establishment is thinking about this. And it's like such perfect luck that he's the person that she goes to, but like he is not quite suspicious enough yet of Dr. Caden. And she doesn't realize that he is like a potential ally in this. So she's like, oh, well, like send me to the biggest expert. I want to talk to this Caden guy.
This is real banality / stupidity of evil, though.
Right.
Because like if Caden were smart at all, he would have someone working the front desk that was in on it.
Yeah.
You can't have Ravok out there working reception, you know?
But it just gets suspicious when the person working the front desk is like getting money from the conspiracy and they like pull up to work in like a super nice Range Rover or something. You're like, but you're like,
yeah,
you know, you're a receptionist. Like, I mean, every receptionist should have the car they want, but just kind of strange credulity given the way the economy works.
Dr. Ravok is like, you're in luck. Dr. Caden, he's an expert. That's great news. The bad news, there's just so much of this dysphoria syndrome going around. He's a little bit busy fixing all of that. So if you want to make an appointment, we could schedule you for like 8 months from now.
Yeah. It's like trying to get a specialist to see you for any medical thing currently.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to do it.
Do it. Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
So meanwhile, Yared goes to Janeway. And he like knocks on the door of Janeway and My Name is Jeffin's shared apartment. And I love the way his performance changed a little bit here because he's like sort of repping that he's a cop, but he's a little less officious than he's been in previous interactions. And is like, hey, I'm just looking for Janeway. Is she here? Like, I really liked it. And, you know, he starts asking her questions, you know, about like, oh, yeah, that guy with the shoulder wound that was like hiding out in your old apartment. What do you know about that guy? We found him with some Post-its that were marked as stolen from the power plant. Know anything about that?
It's really one of those scenes that begins with Janeway and My Name is Jeffin, like beginning on the defensive. But as soon as he got it at Yared, like, makes it clear that he knows a bunch of stuff. Like, they've got to play ball.
Yeah.
And so that's what they decide to do. At the hospital, boy, you really see the dark side of Dr. Caden here. He is ripshit at Dr. Ravok for how he handled the 7 of 9 situation, like just letting her go.
How could she just walk out?
He wanted to talk to somebody that had found that much information about the conspiracy. And this is kind of when Ravok puts it all together that there is in fact a conspiracy afoot that he is not in on.
And now I'm going to jail forever because of this fucking guy.
Caden makes like the most like neoliberal argument possible here, where he's like, the real public health threat is to the economy.
It's straight out of Extreme Measures.
It's amazing. you could just picture Gene Hackman delivering this speech.
How did it make you feel for this scene to play out with so many props that could hit a guy on the back of the head or or possible improvised weapons here? Because like there's so much tension here in this scene and how it's blocked, where at any moment, if Ravok isn't looking directly at Caden, I'm like, don't take your eyes off of him, man. He's going to shoot you or hit you.
Yeah.
And or whatever.
And there's so many devices that can presumably kind of control your mind.
Yeah.
Like anytime Ravok isn't on screen, I'm assuming there's like 50-50 chance he's getting, you know, body snatched in this episode. Cause Caden's like, you know, like got a bit of a conspiracy going on here, man. You want to hit this? And like passes it over to him.
Like there's one version of tension that goes like, Caden is going to remove the problem from the board.
Right.
Like the obstacle is going to go away. And then there's a different way to play it, which is the confidence that Caden has that he's untouchable because he has well-placed allies and that there's nothing that Ravik could do to threaten that. And that's ultimately the direction the scene plays out. But that it uses both forms of tension together, I think is really well done.
It's so well written. You kind of get the sense that Caden is the kind of person that's never truly faced a consequence for their horrible actions. And like now that he finally might, it's like sort of breaking his brain.
Yeah.
We get the counter-conspiracy scene now where there's like a secret McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Where Janeway, Seven, Paris, my name is Jaffin, and Yared meet up in the bar and start planning on like how they can contact Voyager and like, you know, how they can start to like undo this horrible conspiracy. And Seven and Yared are going to sneak into the hospital where like, you know, they pretend Seven is down bad with dysphoria syndrome. This scene is kind of reminiscent of Star Trek IV a little bit. Like they kind of sneak into the hospital with Seven on the gurney to get back into the belly of the beast, see what's going on.
Seven's there to get dialysis.
Thank God, what is this, the Dark Ages?
Janeway and my name is Jeffin go to the power plant to try and get they have to shut down the power so that the shields can go down and all the abducted Voyager people can be beamed up. And I love how much they play with whether Jeffin is like double crossing her and has been in on the conspiracy or not.
Great job with the tension here too. It was either that or my name is Jeffin was going to die.
It really felt like both were distinctly possible.
Yeah.
So she gets on FaceTime with the Voyager and is still believes herself to be Catherine Janeway, like hard up for work refugee who was lucky to get a job at this power plant. So when they call her captain on the FaceTime, she's like, just call me Catherine. And Harry's like, oh yeah, that's what I said. Maybe there was some interference on the line.
Their conversation gets interrupted because the Quarren ships start attacking Voyager and... this is coincidentally when Janeway and my name is Jeffin are set upon by security folks.
Yeah. And Jeffin's like absent at the beginning of this. And Janeway like is alone. She has to like jump off the catwalk to the lower level.
I love the redemption of Jeffin here because you feel for a moment like maybe she's been double crossed. But when my name is Jeffin shoots all those guys and murders them. Way to go, Jeffin.
Way to go, Jeffin. Like, he's a real marksman, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all these guys are presumably trained to use their weapons, and he is fucking wasting them.
There's no one more desperate or motivated than someone in love. Yeah. You really see it here.
Yeah. And it's so tragic because he's fighting to have her go away from him, you know?
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, like, the transporters get knocked out on Voyager... like even Ravik is getting clip showed at this point. Like,
yeah,
things are really going left for their big plan. And it seems like the Voyager is about to get destroyed by these pursuing ships. When Kim of all people comes up with a tactical plan that not even Commander Mark could come up with, which is put a bunch of bombs in life rafts and send them out. And then like, hide their biosignatures in Voyager while they blow up all the ships that are tractoring in the life rafts. I loved this.
It's great. It's great. You just hope it doesn't bite them in the ass later when they need to abandon ship again.
Yeah. And they only have two left on the whole ship?
Uh-oh.
Bravo, Ensign.
Can they manufacture new ones the way they manufactured the Delta Flyer?
It would seem as though that would be possible, yeah.
One would hope.
So on the factory floor, we get a nice little callback again to the first episode. Janeway accidentally caused a core overload many times during her shifts on the factory floor. And she's like, I've got a plan. I know exactly how to trigger a core overload. It's just me doing my job. And she does that, and the sirens start going off, and the power starts flickering and going out across the city.
Yeah.
It's great.
I thought that, you know, we've always wanted to be cast as extras on a Star Trek show and get blown out into space. I thought that like a nice like second best, like if they didn't want to do that, it would be if we could get cast as like the emergency alert voices in an alien factory, you know?
I thought you were going to say love interest to the captain.
I don't think I'm good enough as an actor for that.
I'm going to turn my camera back on and I'm going to look at the Paramount people when I say I would dye my hair very gray to be a captain's love interest.
Wow. I would pay a lot of coin to see that.
So this plan works because the shields drop and Voyager starts beaming folks away and you get the perspective from both sides in a really interesting way. Like success on Voyager means kind of tragedy on the surface when Janeway is beamed away right in front of My Name is Jeffin.
I was also thinking a lot about Ravik and how he's still in Caden's clutches.
It doesn't sound great.
I really wanted some like poetic justice for Caden, that he would like fall into a clip show device and have his own brain subjected to the thing that he's been doing to so many other people or something.
A lot of folks going over railings this episode. I wouldn't have minded if you went over one of those either.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of buttons on this episode, but we start with, it turns out that the government of this planet was totally willing to do the right thing in the end, even if it was counter to the needs of capital. And that means releasing all of these valuable workers from the factory and starting to like repatriate people that had been affected by this situation. Really nice to know that the government is there for you when capital runs amok, right?
The ambassador's like, look, we'll never use this medical knowledge for evil. But I gotta say, they ran thousands of people through this facility that really only had 3 beds. The efficiency involved in an operation like this, I think, is something we do want to export into our factories.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So few people were in on this conspiracy.
How many beds did they have, Ben? They had 3 beds.
Yeah.
They worked thousands of people through there.
I really thought that the reveal was going to be that this entire species was in on it. Like, we don't really care like who we fuck over to get enough workers to run our economy, which... you know, would be more in line with like the way like colonial powers treated the places that they conquered in Earth history. But no, it was just like a few like rogue individuals that were entirely working against what their government would allow normally.
So Dr. Caden's been hit with 1,000 malpractice suits.
His insurance company will be dropping him. Yeah. Meanwhile, in their quarters, Paris shows BLT his second favorite thing.
Yikes! And away!
They watch some cartoons together, and he gets some absolutely massive relationship brownie points from her for having, protected her when he didn't even know that she was his wife, and then gets his... relationship brownie crumbled and thrown in the garbage when she observed that he was also being flirty with other patrons in the bar.
Oh no, Paris.
You came so close to a win.
Yeah.
He snatched an L from the mouth of a W.
Speaking of wins and losses, in Janeway's quarters, My Name is Jeffin walks in with a shoulder bag of a guy who's about to Incredible Hulk his way off the ship. It's so interesting to hear that Janeway has kind of puzzled it out. He can stay if he wants, but they can't fuck anymore.
It's my favorite way of relaxing.
And with that being the decision, My Name is Jeff, and is like, yeah, I'm going to go work another job where there's relationship potential with my coworkers.
Yeah, I got to throw a lot of crap out from my apartment.
Hey, yeah, do you want any of that stuff? Because it's kind of a lot of stuff. Also, who's going to pay the cleanup deposit? Because there's kind of a lot of blood in your quarters.
They come after me for that. I'm fucking suing.
Kind of a breathtaking moment at the end, though, on the Voyager bridge, where another great Kate Mulgrew performance is she kind of enters the bridge. She looks kind of unsteady and uncertain.
Yeah.
And when she sits down next to Chakotay, I mean, Chakotay's not gone through what she has, But Chakotay's a little gentle with her.
Yeah.
Wanting to make sure that she's ready to leave. And it almost seems like for a moment she does regret leaving.
Yeah, like she would have been perfectly happy staying, you know?
It's one of those performances where, like, her behavior does not quite match up with the dialogue.
Right.
Because she, like, steadies herself and orders the ship away, while also, like, it sure does seem like she's feeling some mixed feelings about going.
Absolutely. I liked that the very last image in the episode was the camera panning down and Chakotay's pencil magically coming back together as one piece.
Ben, why don't you hop out of the tub and we can finish up the rest of the episode? What do you say?
I'm pot committed at this point. I say okay, we finish it this stay? Way.
All right.
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies. I don't like friends. And I don't like you.
Did it feel to you like this was Voyager's Inner Light episode?
Oh, interesting.
Like, did it hit as hard as that? I mean, I think it's obvious that it couldn't and wouldn't hit as hard as that.
Right.
But I wonder if this was their attempt.
I didn't think about that. I really liked the two-part arc. I thought it was so well written. I thought the tension that in some ways they are just abducting everybody again, and it's like almost as like against their will the second time around. Like, I kind of wanted to see a scene of like 100 people materializing in the cargo bay and somebody standing up and be like, this may be a surprise to you. Your memory has been altered. Come with us and we will like explain everything. Cause like most people don't have any context for getting repatriated to the ship at all.
This is a big project.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't get to see the scope of the problem in a way that I think might change the tone of the ending.
Yeah.
Like, I felt uneasy at the end of this. Like, this is a captain putting on a brave face, but she and so many other people really went through some shit. I like the episode and I like its two-parterness. I like that Chakotay is made the hero in a fun way.
Yeah.
I think Roxanne Dawson's direction was great. I think the way she moved the camera in a lot of scenes was like showed some flair and panache. And I thought she made herself look really good too. Like, the challenge of directing yourself.
Yeah.
And to not only direct yourself, but to direct yourself well, I thought was apparent.
Yeah, she made some acting choices in this that I thought were so non-obvious, but like really made sense the more I thought about them, that I was really impressed. Yeah, really nice job by her.
Yeah, strong episode. I dug it.
You want to see if there's anything strong in the P1 inbox?
Strong enough for an FOD. Made for everyone else, I guess.
Hmm.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a promotional nature, and that message goes like this. Does your company, product, destination, nonprofit, or other professional project need a communications and public relations consultant?
Wow.
The Palm Tree Type has over 15 years of experience, ranging from hotels, cities and destinations, consumer packaged goods, nonprofits, and business campaigns.
Wow.
We help our clients by expertly crafting their narratives to share their stories to engage in an honest way. Visit thepalmtreetype.com/work to learn more and see if we may be your type.
I like the name of this company. It makes me feel like very relaxed, like I'm on vacation.
So this is an outfit that specializes in storytelling and branding and public relations needs. I think everyone could use some help in that area, right?
Yeah. I mean, Lord knows I could.
Thepalmtreetype.com/work.
Check it out. Adam, our next priority one message is from Max, and it's to Ben and Adam. It goes like this. I was just listening to your show and thinking how the calling in sick and talking really slow to sound convincing guy sounds like the floating in space and talking really slow to sound like he's in space guy. Is it the same guy? Damn, that is a good point, Max.
Max, the problem is Ben and I only have like three impressions between us. That's all we got.
Yeah.
That's a great call.
Three impressions and three jokes, you know.
Do you think anyone on a science fiction show confuses calling in sick voice and being in space voice, and that creating a real problem when you're trying to call in sick? You're like, hey, I know I'm scheduled for a bridge shift. And Chakotay is like, son, are you floating in space?
Red alert.
Sensors, do we have anyone? Have anyone floating in space at the moment?
I was thinking like if you're the actor and you like calling the producers to be like, I honestly don't think I'm well enough to make it to set today. And they're like, but your whole scene is floating in space. This sounds perfect. Come in. It's like, not, you're not going to infect anybody. You're going to be in a spacesuit all day.
They're both on a spacewalk. It's like, all right, hand me that torque wrench. Hey, are you sick or something, man? We need to take you back to the ship.
Hey, if you're not well enough to hand me that torque wrench, you're not well enough to be at work. Go home.
Good stuff, Max. Ben, our final priority one message is from Dan from Olympia, and it is to she, who is my wife. Their message goes like this. Hello, chicken. I'm sorry that you're just now finding out that I've spent some of our tax return on a P1. Thanks for loving me anyway and tolerating the silly podcast that brings me so much joy. I love you forever.
Dang. Way to go, Dan from Olympia, on having the taxes done already.
I love a preemptive apology.
Yeah.
She was my wife is finding out about this misappropriation of funds.
Yeah.
Go ahead and start that message with an apology, Dan. Good job.
That's smart. That's just smart business by Dan.
Smart business to redirect any and all tax return funds to the priority one messages.
Yeah.
You can do what Dan did by going to MaximumFund.org/Jumbotron, where you can hear your words come out of our mouths, selling your product or service or a message to a loved one, and they go a long way toward supporting the production of our show.
Sure do.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to he got it at Yared. I really laughed at that scene where he like showed up and my name is Jeff and answered the door. And he was like, I'm technically not a cop anymore. I can't just act like I'm a cop. You know?
Yeah.
Like, how many characters in movies and TV have we seen go to a door and like sort of rep that they are a cop to kind of get inside, you know?
Yeah.
Like abusing the trust of the people inside. And he was too good of an egg. Like he might be the only good cop, you know?
Now look, I may be moving in with my boyfriend after 1.5 days, but I'm not gullible. I'm not just going to let you in here.
Yeah.
Without seeing some identification.
I may be secretly treating a bleeding man in the other room who held me up at gunpoint, but I don't just believe anything anyone tells me.
I may be covered in blood. That's not my blood.
But I'm nobody's fool.
I am going to make my Shimoda, my name is Jeffin, because I'm just excited by someone who moves as fast as he does and like does not dwell or wallow in the bad news. Like, he shot his shot. He got to the point of moving in with a special lady. Didn't work out. Now he's got his over-the-shoulder bag. He's going to go live his life. Maybe find another woman to shack up with after 18 hours.
His over-the-shoulder bachelor pad accoutrement holder.
Yeah, just amazing that his performance was good enough to make us forget how ridiculous the pace with which he moved the relationship along.
Yeah. Like, wow.
Is that just how they do it on Quarren?
Yeah. If you went to a high school on Quora, You should see how the quarantines get into it.
Perfect.
All right, Adam, why don't you head over to the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker, and fire up the game board that will tell us how our next episode is going to go. Well, I tell you what it is. The next episode is season 7, episode 18, Human Error. Seven's attempt to explore her human side distracts her from her duties and puts Voyager at risk.
Huh.
It is not her duty to risk that booty. Just put it that way.
No. All right, Ben. Well, our runabout slowly pulses on Lore's face, square 28, the Naked Now episode.
Wouldn't that be Data's face?
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's Data's.
But he's making kind of a Lore expression, no?
Yeah, but he was drunk at the time, you know? Like, getting all drunk right. can bring the Lore out in just about anyone.
There's a Janeway square 6 squares ahead. That would take us up to the top of the board.
Wow. We hit that pretty recently, I feel like.
And that would be a Measure of a Man episode.
Wow.
Were we to hit it?
Dang.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Ben, today's date is 3/11. Let us discover the color of this dice's energy as I roll it. I've rolled a 3.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Atlantis on square 31. It's a dry episode, Ben. Regular old episode for you and me.
Oh, what a relief. How are your tootsies doing? You pretty chilly?
They're both cold and pruned in a way I've never seen before.
Yeah, I'm really clammy right now. I'm looking forward to being done with this episode in a big way. So let's get through these credits pretty quickly.
Our thanks to our great producer, Wendy, for making this episode sound listenable, given the many audio challenges we're presenting.
Sorry about the crying Daron and the splashy tub and the boomy roomy. Our thanks to Adam Ragusea, who made the great Janeway song off of Dark Materia's Inspiration. Our thanks to Card Daddy Bill Tilly, who you can reach out to on social media if you would like to send something in for a Code 47 episode. He will vet you. Hey, a little bit of news. Welcome aboard to a new member of the Uxbridge Shimoda team.
That's right, Ben. Rob Adler is officially an Uxbridge Shimoda employee. He will be running things social media.
Rob has been working with us for a while, editing Code 47 videos for our YouTube channel and also editing Greatest Trek episodes and stuff here and there. We're really excited to have him aboard. He's super talented, and he's going to be, you know, I think trying to help us improve our offering both online and in the feed. And one thing that will be happening around that is we're going to start doing a monthly newsletter. So if you'd like to get a little email inbox love from us, sign up for the mailing list. I think you can sign up for it at podshop.biz. And also at gach.biz/mail.
Yeah. Listen, Bill Tilly isn't going anywhere.
No.
He's sticking around.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure that you know that.
Card Daddy is in the mix. We are expanding. We are not contracting or swapping.
That's right. In spite of what may be occurring in Ben's bathwater, no contraction. No contraction!
With that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that, you know, tries to observe its duty a little bit more carefully than we have today.
Go get dry.
Oh, God. This fucking sucks. Make it so.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.